nanohub.org.
You can follow along with this presentation using printed slides from the NanoHub. Visit www.nanohub.org and download the PDF file containing the slides for this presentation. Print them out and turn each page when you hear the following sound. Enjoy the show.
All right, so this is part two of our story about traditional MOSFET theory. So I'll quickly review what you just heard. Then we'll do an approximate version of the bulk charge theory, which is really what people use in practice. Then we'll talk about velocity saturation and wrap up. Okay, so here are typical IV characteristics. And the thing to note is that all modern transistors, the saturated current, or at high VDS, goes as VG minus VT approximately to the first power. A little bit higher, maybe 1.2 power, 1.3 possibly. Nowhere near the 2 that our simple theory says. So that's one of the things that we have to fix. But first of all, we're going to discuss this. We're going to try to fix up our square law theory. And this is a summary of the square law theory, which ignores the bulk charge. So let me remind you how we got that. We derived this simple drain current expression that works all the time. Now we can integrate this exactly, or we can have various approximate solutions. The simplest thing we could think of doing was just saying that, well, along the channel, the potential rises near the towards the drain, so it takes more voltage to create an inversion layer, so that the local threshold voltage is position dependent. And if I say that, well, what the voltage does is just raise the local threshold voltage, I get this simple expression for the inversion layer charge. Once you go ahead and integrate that, we get the familiar square law theory. Okay. Well, then we did a little bit better. We said that, well, actually, when the potential changes, I have to bend the bands more. Yes, I had that part in before. But when I bend the bands more, I deplete more. And when I deplete more, I get more depletion charge. So that second term varies also. And if you do that integration, you know, this is what you get. And this is kind of a mess. People don't like to deal with this. Even circuit models don't like to converge as well with this. So it's not widely used in practice. Okay, but your textbook points out that we could do a Taylor series expansion of this for small VDS. And if you did that, what you would find is the simple expression that we get from the square law theory still works. Okay, ID is mu times Cox W over L VG minus VT times VDS. Okay, we get the same answer. Okay, now, if I want to go to higher drain voltages, I have to do the expansion of that thing to second order, keep the squared term. Okay, so if we expand this thing to second order for larger VDS, we get something that is almost like the square law theory, but there is this extra term M that comes in. And that's when you do the Taylor series expansion, you find out that this is what M is. Okay, so we get results that if we do Taylor series expansions that don't look too bad. Now, what if we use that expression? This is almost the same expression we had before, but we'll get into trouble if VDS gets too large. Our inversion layer charge will turn around and change sign. So just like we did before, there will be some critical voltage, but now instead of being VG minus VT, it'll be smaller, VG minus VT divided by M. And if I take this expression, if I differentiate it and find out where it hits its peak and starts to turn around, then I'll stop there. That will give me the saturation voltage. I'll put that saturation voltage back in the expression, and I'll get something that looks like square law again. It's just divided by M. Okay, was there a question? Okay. So this is the form that people like to use the bulk charge theory in, because it's easier to deal with. But what I want to talk about now is how could we get these much more transparently? And how could we physically interpret what this thing M is? You know, because this is the form that we're going to... we're going to take this now as a starting point for our velocity saturation model and extend this for velocity saturation. Okay, so how would we do this bulk charge theory approximately? So we start with the same drain current expressions we're always using. We write the charge as varying down the channel with the local threshold voltage. We have the proper description now for the local threshold voltage, including the variation of the bulk charge. But that's what causes all the problem, this square root. And when we integrate that, we get the 3/2 power that we don't want. So we could approximate that, as I mentioned earlier, just by taking a Taylor series expansion. Instead of having the correct depletion charge versus voltage with the black line, we're just going to do a Taylor series expansion around V equals zero, and we're going to say that red line is close enough. Okay, so how do we do that? We just take a Taylor series expansion. So we take the term at V equals zero, and then we take the derivative with respect to voltage, and we evaluate at V equals zero, and we'll forget all the higher order terms. Okay. Well, if you take that derivative, you'll find that first of all, you can just see physically what it's equal to. dQ dV is a capacitance. And in fact, if you differentiate these terms, you'll recognize that you end up with epsilon over the width of the depletion region. So this term here is just the depletion layer capacitance. And actually, to make the capacitance positive, when you increase the voltage, you deplete more and get more negative dopants. So it's increasing negative, so I have to have a negative sign in order to get a positive capacitance. Okay, so it's just a Taylor series expansion. So we're going to simplify the expression for the depletion region charge. Instead of using this square root, we'll just use this first order Taylor series expansion. Okay, makes life a lot simpler. Okay, so our inversion layer charge along the channel is going to be given by this threshold voltage expression. Instead of using the proper expression for the depletion layer charge, we're going to use this first order Taylor series expansion. When we do that, we just insert the QD expression in the equation above it. We get this expression. We had a V to begin with. Now we have a CDM times V. We lump all those parameters together. You can see that the first several terms are just, you know, minus the flat band voltage, minus 2 psi B, plus depletion charge over C aux. That's just minus the threshold voltage at the source. So the last term is 1 plus the depletion capacitance over the oxide capacitance. So we end up with a really simple expression for that charge, almost as simple as the square law, except that we have this factor M. And M is the ratio is 1 plus depletion layer capacitance over oxide capacitance. So it's something that's always a little bit bigger than 1. Okay. And what is it physically? It's called this body effect coefficient. You know, you can see that it's the ratio that tells me if I apply a gate voltage, what portion of it gets in and modulates the surface potential. You know, the portion is 1 over M. So I take VG and divide by M, and that's how much the surface potential changes. Okay. All right. And, you know, since the ratio of the silicon capacitance to the oxide capacitance is about 3, you could also express this difference as the ratio of the oxide thickness to the depletion layer thickness, if you prefer to do it that way. Okay, so now it's really easy. Now we simply take our simple expression for the charge, put it in the integral expression for the current, do the integration, and we get something that is nice and simple. We also have pinch off. When this charge goes to zero, the device is pinched off, but that happens at a lower voltage because M is greater than 1. And just like before, the gradual channel approximation fails. Current still flows. but we'll now just consider that the red part is our actual channel, and the rest of it is just some short region that just sweeps the electrons out. So we find out where the pinch-off layer occurs. We substitute that drain voltage into that drain current expression, and we say thereafter it's just constant, except for the fact that this effective channel length L prime might get a little bit shorter as I apply a bigger and bigger voltage. Okay. So that's the form that we're going to use our bulk charge theory in. And let's just summarize it then. So the IV characteristics of the MOSFET, either the square law or the bulk charge, always gives us the same expression down here in the linear regime where it acts like a voltage-controlled resistor. There is some saturation voltage, which is VGS minus VT divided by M. And there's some saturation current, which is still a square law, and just divided by M. Right. So it's just as easy to include the bulk charge. This is the form that it is typically used. But we still have this big problem that it doesn't look anything at all like a modern MOSFET, because MOSFETs don't have the current increasing as the square of the gate voltage. Yes?
Is there any physical configuration where we can have M equal to 1, like depletion capacitance just vanishes as compared to COX? Or is it just an ideal thing, like it's not possible to realize physically?
So your question is, are there places that we can get M is equal to 1?
So CDN has to be equal to 0.
Yeah. And the answer is yes. When we get to fully depleted SOI devices, you'll see that you can, in principle, get M equals 1. That's one of their theoretical advantages. They should have ideal subthreshold slope, because the same factor M comes into the subthreshold current. Now, even more interesting, there's a student who just graduated here who came up with an idea for using a ferroelectric in the gate insulator and making it work in a way that it effectively had a negative capacitance. And then 1 plus, let's see, what is this? CDM over COX. He made COX behave like a negative capacitance. So this thing was less than 1, which means that the subthreshold swing was less than 60. So that's something that's very interesting, and there are several groups all over the world that are trying to demonstrate that idea now. So there's some really interesting things that you can think about doing with this. That's kind of we're not talking about subthreshold current yet, but kind of the holy grail of devices is finding a device with a subthreshold swing less than 60. Okay, so here's our linear current. There's our saturation voltage. There's our saturated current. It's still a square law device, so we're missing something. And what we're missing is velocity saturation. So, if you take a large piece of silicon and measure the velocity versus electric field, there is this regime where the velocity is proportional to the electric field, and the constant of proportionality is the mobility. But if you apply an electric field that's higher than about 10 kilovolts per centimeter, then the velocity saturates. In silicon, it's about 10 to the seventh. So the question is, where are we? The question is, can we assume velocity is proportional to the electric field or that it's constant? Well, typical device these days, has a VDD of, the condition we have to have is that the electric field along the channel has to be much less than 10 to the fourth volts per centimeter, because then we're in that low field regime. Okay, VDD is on the order of 1 volt. If I make a 1 micron channel length, that's 10 to the minus fourth centimeters. So 10 to the fourth would imply an average electric field, a 1 micron channel with a 1 volt across it would have an electric field average of about 10 to the fourth. So as long as the channel length is much bigger than a micrometer, we don't have to worry about velocity saturation. But if it's much less than a micrometer, then the electric fields are very, very strong, and you would expect to have to worry about velocity saturation. So channel lengths today are about 0.05 micrometers, and the voltages are about 1 volt. So the electric fields are very strong, 10 times stronger than we need to saturate the velocities. So we should put that factor in. And what would we expect to happen? So down here, the electric field would be low, and you wouldn't expect anything to happen when you apply a small drain voltage. That should be just the same. But as you apply bigger voltages, if the electric field gets to the point where the carriers can't go any faster, then the velocity could, or the current could saturate before the channel pinches off. The carriers just can't go any faster than that. So we would expect that VDSAT would be reduced. And if VDSAT is reduced, then IDSAT is also reduced. So that's what should happen. So then we have to figure out how to do it. And this is the way people normally do this calculation. This is the velocity versus field characteristic. You can fit this really well by an expression like this. In fact, you can derive this from the scattering physics of silicon. But this is a little complicated to work with when we try to integrate it for an IV expression. So people usually use something that isn't quite as accurate but is close. It actually works even better for holes, but it's not too bad for electrons. So you can see what's happening here, that when the electric field is much smaller than the critical field, we can ignore this stuff in the denominator, and we just get velocity as minus mobility times electric field. When the electric field is much bigger than the critical field, we can ignore the 1. The electric fields cancel, and we get the velocity is mobility times a critical field. But we know that that's the saturated velocity. Okay. So what people typically know is the saturated velocity is 10 to the 7th. They typically know the mobility, and then you can compute the critical field. And it, for typical numbers, it works out to be somewhere around 10 to the 4th for pure silicon. So that's simple enough that we can use. So we can go back to our IV derivation. Current is charge times velocity. Now we're just going to use a more complicated expression for velocity. You know, I've got the magnitude of the electric field here because the velocity is always going to be reduced when the electric field is strong. So I kind of make sure that the sign doesn't cause it to increase. Right. So let's see. It's mu times the electric field gives me that velocity field characteristic, and that fits pretty well. Now, when I want to integrate that, I can take the 1 plus magnitude of the channel field over EC, bring it over to the other side. The electric field is dV dy. Then I'm left on the right-hand side with W, Q, mu effective times electric field, which is minus dV dy. So I have an expression like that. So now we just separate variables. So I multiply through by a dy. So I've just got a dV on the right-hand side. Got a dy here. Let's see, I have a typo here. This should be a dV dy, so I'm just going to end up with a dV there. So I'll end up integrating y from 0 to the end of the channel. Here, this will be a dV dy times dy. So I'll integrate voltage from 0 voltage at the source to VDS. And then I'll integrate the other side. Now, this is exactly what we did before. So what we're going to get here is exactly what we got before. Just what we had before was just this. We got an L on this side. We divided through, and that's what gave us a W over L. So the right-hand side is just what it was before. Here I'm going to get ID times channel length. And then if I pull the channel length out here, when I integrate voltage, I get VDS. Pardon me? Yeah, I get VDS divided by L. So I can interpret that as the average electric field in the channel divided by the critical field. And if the average electric field in the channel is much smaller than the critical field, it won't make any difference and I'll have what I had before. But if the average electric field in the channel is big compared to that, then I'll get something different. So the final result is I'm just going to have some factor here that multiplies exactly what I had before. So my drain current expression will be just exactly what I had before multiplied by some extra factor. And that extra factor is just 1 plus VDS over L is the average channel field and divided by the critical field. Okay. And you know, I can remember the critical field, mu times the critical field is Vsat. So I can, if I prefer, I can express the critical field in terms of things like mobility and Vsat, then I maybe remember their values better. So we get something that we just multiply the previous parameter, the previous expressions by something like this. So that's valid when VGS is greater than VT or on. But again, we have this problem that if we carry VDS too far, this thing will turn around and go negative and we've gone too far. You know. So again, we could differentiate that, find the maximum, and find the VDSAT. And if you do that, you'll get a more complicated expression. And if you look at that expression, you can see it's always going to be smaller than the value we had before. So intuitively, we expected that it would make the current saturate earlier. And then if you plug that into the drain current expression, we'll get an expression for the drain current. And that's also. And if you look at that a little bit and take the limit that this is very big, and then you have the square root of 1 plus something small and do a Taylor series expansion, you'll see that in the long channel limit, we just get back what we had before because it's so long that the electric field is so small, we never have velocity saturation. So we get back just exactly what we had before. If we go to the short channel limit, so we just go back to that expression, let L go to 0, then that 1 plus, I can ignore the 1, take that limit, and you'll find a different expression for VDSAT. And if you plug that into the IDSAT expression, you'll get this really simple expression that I derived in that early argument that you can almost see and that looks intuitive. COX, VG minus VT is the charge. Vsat is the saturation velocity. So typically what would happen is that the electric field would get bigger near the drain and you would saturate there first. But as you go to shorter and shorter channels, a bigger and bigger portion of the channel would have a high electric field and the velocity would be saturated across a bigger and bigger portion. If you go to L equals 0, the electric field is above the critical field everywhere, and the velocity is saturated everywhere. So it makes sense. Okay, so this is what we would call complete velocity saturation. Everywhere in the channel you're saturated, not just near the drain end where the electric field is high. Yes?
Why don't this charge distribution from source to drain is not very according to this theory?
Pardon me?
The charge distribution from source to drain. I plot the charge from source to drain. It's remaining constant. I mean,
if you're in this complete velocity saturation limit.
So how this drain voltage drop from source to drain is affecting the charge?
Well, once you hit that point, there is no drain voltage dependence, right? The assumption now is the drain voltage is high enough that the electric field is above the saturated velocity, and at that point, you no longer have any dependence on drain voltage.
Right. But the charge distribution should depend on drain voltage.
Pardon me?
The charge distribution in the channel.
Well, if you accept this velocity saturation model, no, it wouldn't. I mean, it would initially, while the drain voltage was low and your velocity wasn't saturated, it would look like the previous model, and it would vary, you know, thick at the end and get thinner. But as you keep increasing the drain voltage and you put the field above E critical everywhere, then the velocity would be constant. And in, you know, an increased drain voltage would just give you an increased electric field. But that's not going to give you any more current because they're not going any faster.
Yeah, it is fine, but the charge distribution in fake plot. If I plot the voltage drop distribution from source to drain, mm-hmm. in drain it is say 1 volt, in source side it is 0. So this drain voltage is getting dropped from 0 to 1 volt. So according to that, I'll get a charge distribution also. So charge. Yeah. Means earlier we tried VTS, VT at Y.
No. This is the way. Of course, you probably shouldn't think about the gradual channel approximation in this limit either, right? Because yes, your potential is changing along the channel, but you know the lateral electric field is probably as strong or stronger than the vertical electric field. So superimposing these and writing things like Q is equal to C aux, you know, Vg minus Vt minus V of Y. That assumes that we have a small electric field along the channel. So some different things could happen. And it may have to do with the variation of the quasi-Fermi level along there.
Here we can assume that, okay, whatever carriers have been injected from the source due to high electric field right away is going to be drained.
That's what complete velocity of saturation assumes when you assume zero electric field, zero channel length.
Any additional carrier is directly going. It's not contributing to the bulk charges.
Yeah. Now, I don't want to push this too far because I think it's totally wrong. I mean, it just isn't the way things work. You know, it's the way the textbook explains it, but I don't think anyone believes that it's the way things work anymore. So, now, there is something that's really interesting. If you take that expression, and you'll this complicated square root of 1 plus a bunch of stuff over 1 minus a bunch of stuff. And if you look at it just a little bit above threshold and simplify the expression, what you find is that VDSAT is the square law value, even for a short channel, right? And IDSAT is the square law value, which says that any MOSFET, no matter how short its channel length, if you look at it very close to threshold, it will look like a square law device, which is kind of interesting. And, you know, why is that? So physically, you know, what this means, you just put this in this general expression and simplify it, and that's what you get. Physically, the way you think about it is that once you've pinched off this channel somewhere, right? This isn't complete velocity saturation yet, but it's saturated in this region. I should show a little constant region there. But once you've pinched off that, your voltage at this point is Vg minus Vt divided by M, right? That's the pinch-off voltage. Voltage here is zero. So the average electric field is, do I have it? The average electric field is the potential at the pinch-off point divided by the channel length. Okay, if you're very close to threshold, this is very small. So even though the channel length is very small, that can be less than the critical field. So if you operate a short channel transistor close to threshold, it'll look more like a long channel device. And you can see that. I think. At least last time I looked at it, when channel lengths were a little bit longer than they are now, you could see that. Okay. But usually you don't operate that close to threshold. Now, I've never seen a transistor that's looked like this. Okay. This is what you typically see. They look almost linear. It may not be quite linear. It may be going up in powers of alpha that's a little bit bigger than 1. But when people look at this, they'll immediately say, this is a velocity-saturated MOSFET. I should use a velocity saturation theory. When you see linear steps in the current, that's the signature. And that power alpha, you know, it's somewhere between 1 and 2. It's much closer to 1. And it's equal to 1 if you ever get to complete velocity saturation. Yeah. So you just look at this, almost any transistor you see, and you can see those are virtually equal steps. So you're going up as a linear regime. Okay, so now I wanted to end by just, you know, making a comment about velocity saturation. Right? I think I showed these simulations before. These are numerical simulations. This is about the best treatment of transport physics that people can do these days. Putting all of the scattering mechanisms in, don't solve the problem with a drift diffusion equation, which is an approximation. Solve it as rigorously as you can. So here's the conduction band profile. Each dot here represents an electron that's being tracked through a computer subject to acceleration in the electric field and all of the physical scattering mechanisms. At any point, you can just take all of them and add up their velocity, and you get the average velocity versus position. And you can see where Vsat is. Right there, there's no velocity saturation going on. And in the region here where the electric field is the highest, the velocity is the highest. It's not saturating. And the reason is that it's so short that it's scattering that causes saturation. In a bulk semiconductor, you wait long enough and enough scattering occurs and everything settles down. But the carriers are in that high field region such a short time that they can't scatter very much. So they can go much faster than 10 to the 7th. But this is the thing, you know, when we talk about the ballistic MOSFET, we'll find out that where the velocity does saturate is right here at the top of the barrier. And if you do these simulations, what you'll find, that's the top of the barrier. As you increase the drain bias, you can get the velocities going higher and higher down there, but it'll saturate right there. So it saturates at the opposite end of the channel that the velocity saturation model says. But it does saturate. And if you plot the average velocity versus drain bias there, or just divide it by L so it's like electric field, it will look very much like this velocity field curve for silicon. And because all the mathematics then works out the same. It doesn't really matter that the velocity saturates at the source end and not the drain end. You get the same IV characteristics. Okay, so this is all conventional theory. I haven't talked about this. You should be aware that that exists. You know, the first people that did this, they were really incredibly bright. You know, they didn't have computers to check themselves. You know, they first of all worked this out exactly, and they had to do it on a computer or a calculator, but it was really difficult to do. You know, then they developed these simpler laws based on their intuition, and they worked very well. So we've got the square law, we've got the bulk charge theory. We're going to use it mostly in this simplified format. Then we can treat velocity saturation, and we can get characteristics that look pretty much like what you measure, but the physics is really suspect. And finally, we can do these full numerical simulations if you want to put all of the details in. Okay. And again, there's a textbook that has some good discussion of this. Okay, so any questions?
The way we have treated the IV characteristics, it is like above threshold and below threshold. So can we connect it, or we have to use some fitting function to connect this below threshold and above threshold?
I guess you're saying all of this assumes VG is greater than VT, right? And then in the next lecture, is it the next lecture? We do subthreshold. Maybe not the next one, the one after that. And then we use a completely different theory. So when people develop things like SPICE models for circuit simulations, this was a problem because you would have this one theory for sub-threshold and you would have this one theory for above-threshold. And when you put the two together, they might match, but their first derivative might not match or their second derivative might not match. And then when you start doing numerical solutions and iterating, it can cause all kinds of problems. So I think these days there's a technique they call a surface potential model, which goes continuously from below to above, but it involves some numerical integration. It's sort of semi-analytical. You know, parts of it are analytical, but parts of it you have to do a numerical integration in order to find the charge versus surface potential. But I think most modern SPICE models now try to maintain this continuous behavior above and below. Okay, any other questions?